You're listening to Get More Done, a You Can Book Me podcast. I'm your host, Ben Dukavage. Each month, You Can Book Me helps millions of people around the world save time by automating their scheduling and increasing their efficiency. Because of this, we wanted to explore other aspects of productivity and talk to folks to understand how they are using automation, building systems to scale, and helping their teams do more with less. On this episode, I chat with Mark Littlewood, the CEO of Business of Software. For over 14 years, Mark and his team have coordinated conferences to bring software entrepreneurs together to help them build better companies. During our conversation, we talk about how the COVID pandemic has impacted their core business, and Mark shares how he stays productive in spite of his ADHD diagnosis. Enjoy. Excellent. Welcome back to the Get More Done podcast, where we talk about all things productivity and crushing of goals. On today's episode, I'm sitting down with Mark Littlewood, the CEO of Business of Software Conference. So Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Ben. Thanks so much for having me. And apologies for not being there on time. One of the things we're going to talk about today is getting more stuff done. And I really wanted to talk about technology 5 minutes before we start. The power companies are digging up our street and we had a power cut. So there we go. That's life, isn't it? But really, really great to be here and great to see you.
Yeah, super pumped to learn everything about all the cool stuff that you got working on. As you've known from our past episodes, we start with an icebreaker question. So this one, this week, what was the last book you read?
Oh, so the last book I read was The Porpoise by Mark Haddon. It's not a business book, but absolutely fantastic, kind of unputdownable book. Read it in pretty much one sitting over a day. I don't know if you've come across Mark Haddon. He wrote The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is a very well-known book. But Porpoises, just fantastic. Magical realism, not something I'm massive about, but just really, really fabulous, fantastic, very well written. And felt like I was not just watching a film, but almost in a film as I was doing it. So would really recommend
it. And is that just a book about porpoises, or is it like...
No, it's not really about porpoises at all. It's a book about, a journey through life, and it's very kind of woven through a framework of some of the old Greek tales, really, myths and legends. But read it. You have to read it. It's a total sort of journey that sucks you in and makes you, leaves you feeling better about life. So all of the very good things.
Yeah.
So I have a sort of a theory about books, which, there's fiction, which this is, and then there's business books. And the value of a book of fiction is how much you enjoy it multiplied by the number of pages. And the value of a business book is, how useful it is divided by the number of pages, because business is really important and you want to be efficient.
Yes, yes.
A lot of business books are way, way, way too long. But this was one of those books where I was like, oh no, I've only got 50 pages, 20 pages. You just don't want them to finish.
Yeah, it sounds like a really awesome read. And I think a lot of people can find some enjoyment in life and doing the fiction and escaping a little bit with the crazy times as we're living in and all that. So it's really, really great. I'll have to check that out. The Porpoise.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Awesome. So you're the CEO of the Business of Software Conference. And is it the Business of Software Conference or just Business of Software Conference?
Well, it's Business of Software. I mean, the URLs are businessofsoftware.org or .com or whatever it is. So yeah, we're not precious. And most people that will come and attend regularly will think of us as boss, which has all sorts of fun implications when you know, our US conference has been run in Boston, so that's the boss, and we have, I'm apparently the boss, and of course my wife is the boss.
Yes. So tell me a little bit more about the boss, you know, everything that you're working on, and what would all this conference kind of entail?
Sure. So Business Software was founded by a friend of mine, Neil Davidson, way back in 2007. He set up a business and grown it organically to about 40 people and decided he didn't know how to run a company, which of course he did. And he decided he'd go to some conferences and learn about how you run a business. And he looked at various things out there, and lots of stuff for startups, lots of stuff for raising venture capital, you know, endless code things, all the rest of it, but really nothing that he could find that was about how you build a successful software company and how you build successful products. So he drew a short list of people he'd like to listen to, got hold of them, said, I'm running a conference, will you speak? And people like Jeffrey Moore and Joel Spolsky and Kathy Sierra and all sorts of people said, hey, that sounds great. And he set it up and it went from there. But he was running a software company. He and his co-CEO founder, Simon Galbraith, were their full-time gig was running the business. So I run events and networking operations for software entrepreneurs. So he asked me to come in and get involved, and I've been running it pretty much ever since. So, and we try to help people build great software and great software companies. Quite a different focus to most events, which I think are much more transactional, sort of trade-oriented. We don't have a big exhibition hall, and it's very much a high density of high quality people, software entrepreneurs who value spending time together. The talks are long form, typically an hour, and just super, super high value people who, you know, when they get together, sort of spend time helping each other, listening to each other's problems. And, you know, there's a phenomenal network of people that have been part of it and come through, and you know, everyone from HubSpot and, you know, Dharmesh from HubSpot's been coming for years, Shopify, Atlassian, all sorts of you know, pretty significant software companies, as well as a whole range of organizations that some venture backed, some private equity, but a huge number of them who are incredibly successful. You may not have heard of them because they're not the ones that obsess about the TechCrunch headlines or whatever it is. They just want to get out there and build great businesses. So yeah, that's what we do. And being a physical event for many years, we've been running in the States. We started running a European conference about 7 or 8 years ago. Of course, beginning of last year, everything went very, very different.
Yes. How did you all pivot when the pandemic happened?
Well, we don't think of the COVID disaster. We think of the unexpected and very rapid opportunity to do some significant product development and strategy development. We took the view very early on that COVID is a long-term thing. So we actually had a European conference set up for March 22nd, 23rd of 2020. And at the beginning of the year, it was like going to be, you know, it was looking like it was going to be a great year. I mean, registrations, sign-ups were way ahead of where they'd been. And, you know, over those 3 months, it all started to get a bit strange, then concerning, then very concerning, then, oh my God, what are we going to do? We actually turned that event into an online event. And I remember at the conference, you know, the online conference, people were saying, oh God, I don't know how we're going to cope with being at home for the next 2 weeks. It's going to be a disaster. You know, I was like, this isn't going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be a long time. So we, you know, took a couple of days off after that to decompress, then got back together with the team and said, look, let's assume there are no physical events for 5 years. What are we going to do? And I chose that kind of timeline because actually I think that really helped us focus. And it's obvious that we would be doing things online if we were going to exist at all. And it meant that we weren't constantly kind of looking over our shoulder or looking around to say, oh, when are we going to, shall we do another event? Shall we get back? And, you know, let's just say, what do we do? Why do people love what we do? Why do people keep coming back? Why are people so loyal? What are the things that they really value? And how do we then recreate that online? And what are the other great things that you can do online that you can't do at a physical event? And yeah, it's pretty interesting 6 months, I guess. I think we did we took a very different approach to a lot of event businesses where they kind of went online. And what was interesting about 2020 was that everybody could speak at every event, because we were all there sitting at home doing nothing. And so, you know, you could produce an event and have amazing speakers and all the rest of it. And I think what we did find was that because a lot of other event businesses have a very, you know, high component of sponsors, because they have this sort of trade element, and a lot of those are signed up in the year prior to the event, there was a real drive to bring volume to online events. And that meant people dropped their ticket prices or made them free. And you end up with this kind of stellar lineup of people, but you had far too much content. And because the thing was free, you almost have the wrong type of people coming. And we took a different view and kind of very consciously said, well, we can't scale the really important things, the networking, the conversations, those bits of an event that we want to run. So, you know, we kind of stuck by our guns and did a different kind of thing and said, look, you know, if we've got 300 people coming to an online thing, we can really look after them. We can mix people up. We can have those conversations, which are one of the things that people really value. And that's what we've done. And I think, you know, a lot of people were quite skeptical about doing an online thing, because being on Zoom all day is quite exhausting. But we really, really designed everything around being energizing online and having conversations, not watching a slightly second-rate YouTube channel of CEOs showing off and telling you how brilliant they are. So I don't know. We did something right.
Yeah. And I think tying back to just going to your foundation of what makes a successful conference in real life and tweaking the things that maybe can't scale, like you mentioned. I mean, have your past the few conferences here that you've done digitally or online, have they been successful?
Yeah, I think they've been, they've been fantastically successful. I mean, there's so many different ways to measure success, right? I mean, a thing that we've been quite surprised by, and a goal when we shut things down and said, right, we're not doing physical till we know that we can, but we think that's going to be a long-term thing, is that some people who are regular attendees were quite reluctant to come to an online thing because they're like, oh, it's not going to be the same. But, you know, a lot of them have trusted us and said, look, you know, we want to support you, we'll give it a go. And now they're kind of coming back and going, do you know what? I don't know if I'm going to travel from Argentina every time you do this. It's great, but actually I'm getting so much from the virtual event and the virtual things, and I'm really surprised about how they have worked. So, you know, the aim for us was to do something that was so good that people couldn't ignore it, that when they came, they didn't see it as being this is just a poor substitute for not being able to get together in person. And then when we start doing physical events again, we have two parts to the business. And, you know, touch wood, it's good. And we're really kind of looking now at some in-person conferences next year. We obviously are thinking about what they look like and how they work. I think, you know, it's quite key that we don't, there are constraints around that now, and we need to be kind of sensitive to those and make sure that people are comfortable and feel safe and are safe, and that we design that new thing. But but it'll also kind of tie it into virtual events that we run throughout the year. So yeah, we're pretty excited, even if we're all hunkered down in our bunkers and working from home. So
yeah, that sounds really great and exciting for the future too, because you almost have another product, you know, with this virtual side and expanding it, making it more accessible to the world, which is really great. Mm. So tying into that, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about just the power of technology. So how has that come into play with Boss? Like, how have you leveraged technology to do more with less and really scale your own operation?
Great question. I suppose maybe look at that from two places. And I'm very old, right? So I had a birthday yesterday and it had a 5 in it, although there was no zeros. So I'm kind of in the... So I've been around for a long time, and I was involved in running conferences and things in the late 90s. And that's so weird looking back. So what was going on there? You would say, all right, we're going to have a conference, and you would book a venue and you'd get things and you'd phone up speakers. And some of them very proudly at that point said they had email numbers and things. And technology was, it was a different thing. And you would line up some speakers and then you go to a printer and they design some flyers and you'd send them out to people. And literally the minute you sent them out, one of the speakers would pull out or something. So everything that you're sending out is going to be out of date. And for someone to register, they would have to get the thing and fill out their credit card information and then send it through on a fax machine, which would run out of paper or it would break. And then you'd have to phone up your credit card company and give all this information. It's unbelievable. I mean, just the whole thing was extraordinarily convoluted. I mean, just not a real-time thing. Phenomenally expensive, and a very significant chunk of the cost of a business was administration and print production and this, that, and the other. So the internet's changed a lot of that, and that whole Web 1.0 thing has really fundamentally, structurally changed the way that the whole industry has operated. We have a very small team here, and we bring in people that can do, whether it's videography or editing or whatever it is. We bring in kind of people that really know what they're doing for particular functions. But if we were operating in that kind of 90s model now, our headcount would be double easily. And every time you have an extra head, you have extra headaches. that sounds terrible, doesn't it? I mean, I really love I love the people I work with, but I also just, I recognize I'm not a great manager, and I think that's something to just having great, really good, competent people around is really helpful. The more people you have, the more issues you have. So that's the 1.0 bit. Having a website, sending emails, doing all those things, fabulous. And then I think the other thing that's had like a massive, massive impact for us is, it's more the kind of, Web 2.0 type thing of sorting all your systems out. And this is something that I have been doing more and more of over the last few years now. We obviously have online accounts packages. So we use Xero, it's pretty good. Other accounting packages are available. I'm sure they all do the same stuff. Would hate to move from Xero to anything else, just because even if it was something that was better, it's pain changing all these things. But having your website and then your e-commerce stuff and your ability to take money and then connect all that stuff in the background is absolutely beautiful. And for me, particularly over the last couple of years, as I've really kind of looked at it and started to kind of think, not about any particular thing in a silo, whether that's our, you know, our email marketing list, our newsletter, or, you know, our payment systems or whatever, you can see the whole thing in one piece. And but the other thing that I love is Zapier, because all of the things that you want to be able to do to get different bits of software to talk together, you can pretty much now do with a pretty minimal level of programming. But being able to kind of put everything together and see how it all operates is a really beautiful thing. And it shouldn't be a revelation, right? I mean, we've always known it, but it's kind of one of those things. You kind of take a step back and look at what we do now and what we do with Zapier, and I don't know how much we pay them. I mean, it's less than a packet of biscuits for the office every week or so. I mean, it's nothing, but there are people that we don't employ because they allow us to do stuff which is just really easy. But more than that, we actually get a much, much better view of what's going on. And it's really, I've really tried to kind of take on board the understanding of how all the different bits of the operation fit together. And you know, I understand accounts better now. I understand the way that different things work in a way that when we were bringing in, you know, outside accounting firms to do bookkeeping or whatever, it was just much, much harder to get a view. And it's terrible. I sound like an old man, but then I am an old man. It's just really just amazing to be able to kind of look at your business and know at any point just what's going on. And if you don't know what's going on, you can work out why you don't and deal with it.
Yeah. And the technology advances that you've seen just in the last 14 years as well, like with all of these SaaS tools coming online. And I'm a huge fan of Zapier as well, just tying the internet together and automating tasks, because it's something that you're doing multiple times. She's like, just automate that. Because like you said, then you don't have to hire a new person. It's just all handled. And getting a glimpse of your overall structure of everything you got going on too, it's very powerful to have that image, which, I mean, you look at 20 years ago, wouldn't have been possible, right? 14 years ago, wouldn't have been possible.
No. And I remember the first time I was going to take an online accounts package on, and I phoned up my accountant, who was very, very old school, and said, you know, we're going to use this. Do you use it? No, we don't. We use some very, I think it was Sage, which is it's a big company. It's got a pretty horrible accounts package that, you know, no one understands. It's designed to be complicated so that, you know, all of the stuff around that. And he said, why do you want to do this? This is going to be a rubbish thing. I was like, well, because if I'm worried, you know, wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning and I'm worried about my cash flow or what I'm going to owe to HMRC or whatever, I want to be able to just check it. And he's like, well, that's really stupid, because, you know, why would you be waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning? Well, you know, and you could just send me an email or leave me a message, and we can print off the reports for you and send them to you in the post. It's like, it's not going to help me get to sleep at 3:30 on a Saturday morning. So anyway, yeah, just, you know, it's not that I'm a control freak particularly. I just think it's good to be able to know where you are and what you're doing and be able to sort of address those questions. So, yeah, technology is fabulous. And there are some great, great tools. I don't know funnily enough, You Can Book Me is one of my favorite things for you know, setting up meetings and automating a whole load of just slightly annoying things that just suddenly become quite trivial and easy. But Twist, which is an asynchronous, it's like Slack, but not as annoying. I mean, I think Slack is very much don't know, there's lots of notifications and alerts, and it's about, you know, 24/7, 365. And I think there are a lot of organizations that, you know, and people that take a different view and a different approach to things. So, yeah.
Totally. And, you know, speaking a bit about those distractions and notifications, you know, you've talked a bit about your diagnosis with ADHD. So I'd like to explore that a little bit and talk about how maybe that's impacted the way that you work and how maybe that's changed your productivity and how you personally manage your day-to-day.
Yeah, so I suppose I discovered this pretty late. I've been lucky. I'm reasonably bright. I've always kind of managed to hand decent work in at school, even if I didn't necessarily kind of start at the right time. But it wasn't until, I think it was 2013, when I had a speaker at Business of Software. So I have Business of Software to thank for so many things. A guy called Greg Bogus, who's now at Twilio, came along and he talked about being a developer and having depression. And I thought this was an incredibly interesting topic. So, and his talk was something like, it was about developers and depression, but he sort of opened his talk. He said, "Hi, I'm Greg Bogus, and I'm bipolar and I suffer from ADHD. It's about the first time I kind of heard the word. And then he kind of did this incredible talk. It's the only one that's ever had a standing ovation from the audience, primarily about, depression and how you deal with it. But he also talked about ADHD. And I obviously missed a bit of the talk because I remember looking up and, you know, I'm sitting at the front and various things going on. So you kind of keep a lot of, you've got a lot of things going on as a conference organizer. And I just thought when I looked up, I'd missed a slide because he'd got this slide up saying, and I thought it was, this is the normal brain. And actually, I was like, yeah, that's the normal brain. But actually, he'd gone from the normal brain to the ADHD brain. And he was showing the ADHD brain and how it operated. And I was like, yeah, that's completely normal. And then something else. So I kind of missed, I didn't kind of get the whole thing. And I remember my wife came to the event with me and they got into bed that night in the hotel and sort of reflect on the day a bit. And I was like, oh, you know, that talk was absolutely amazing. Oh, that ADHD thing. I think I might have that. And she looked at me like, I don't know. She was like, have you really taken all that, all the rest of the day to work that one out? So, ADHD. And I kind of went to bed and, you know, it was over in Boston. So we were jet lagged and you're kind of all psyched up about the conference. And I woke up about half past three in the morning. I was like, ADHD. I'm going to check this out. I didn't want to wake my wife up. So kind of went into the hotel bathroom, got my laptop out, opened it up, sitting on the only seat in that particular room. It's like ADHD. I'm going to Google this. Open up the laptop. Next minute, it's 5 to 7, and I'm still on Twitter. And I'm like, I think that's a clue. So, I literally managed to kind of spend 3 hours on Twitter before I'd actually started to do the Googling of ADHD, which was the one thing I'd kind of gone in to do. So anyway, it changed a lot for me, you know, kind of did a lot of reading, got a diagnosis, which was no mean feat, actually. But anyway, in the UK, pretty difficult. I think there are probably a lot of undiagnosed ADHD people because they just get bored and distracted as they go through the process of having it diagnosed. I suppose there's three ways that it's changed the way I approach things. You know, one, medication. And, you know, I'm not a sort of big fan generally of, you know, I tend not to have a Nurofen or a aspirin unless I really feel like I needed it. But having regular medication has made a big difference. So there's that side of it. But then I think the whole general awareness and knowing what is gonna really mess you up. And so the sort of thing about ADHD is it's about being stimulated and you kind of getting little hits, little bumps of excitement. And you suddenly realize just how bad technology is and what an evil thing technology is in terms of not everybody has ADHD, but, you know, alerts, notifications, desktop notifications, this, that, and the other are all designed to stimulate you and bring you back into a, hey, rejoin the conversation or, you know, whatever it is. So, I mean, I just have absolutely everything. Everything off, and, you know, even text messages on my phone and things. I will set my notifications so that my family can text me and I get a notification, but that's it. So really kind of managing those things and designing my life around that, I think, is a really important piece of it. And I suppose the other thing is that kind of the flip side of the easily distracted thing is you also have these periods of ultra focus. And so ADHD is not just about being completely distracted by everything around you. There are sometimes when you're so focused on something, you're kind of in a flow state. And as long as, you know, then you can really get stuff done. And understanding how to kind of trigger those times and create the situations where you really can chunk through stuff is very important. And there are different ways that those states come on. And classically, you know, one of the things about ADHD, you give someone with ADHD 8 weeks to do a project, they'll be like, right, I'm going to start. And of course, they will start about an hour before the thing is due to be handed in. So you have to kind of create your own final deadlines much earlier on and break things down into little chunks and drive towards those rather than think about things in a more normal way.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit earlier about just that Parkinson's law of, like, when you give something so much room, it's going to take that room up. So shortening those deadlines definitely help. What other things help you trigger that flow state? You know, we talked about stopping the notifications, but anything else that help you carve out and do some of that deep work?
Switching out the internet as much as possible. Music, generally not. You know, the two things that I generally listen to when I need to get things done are things like Goldberg Variations or something, or the Bach Unaccompanied Cello Suites or something like that. So those are bits of music that I'm very, very familiar with, but really work in the background. And Motorhead, which...
Two sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, but I mean, the sort of, you know, if it's music I've heard, if I haven't heard before, then that's not helpful. But, you know, I could, if I was going to be, I'm not a big karaoke fan, but I think, you know, the song that I'd like played at my funeral and the song that would be my go-to karaoke song would be Killed by Death by Motorhead. Yeah, just having that really familiar kind of music as a background. Creating kind of background noise that's familiar. And then, yeah, the Pomodoro method, that type of thing, whether it's a kind of a 20-minute thing or a, you know, you're going to do X, Y, or Z and absolutely do nothing and phone off and just really focus works very well. Yeah. But, you know, I would absolutely not say, and I'm kind of embarrassed because some of the people that you've spoken to have got some very, you know, they've got a real track record of getting stuff done and making things happen, and they can kind of talk to people. And, you know, in a funny way, I can kind of tell people some of the theory and the principle and the practice of how you get things done, but it doesn't necessarily work for me. I think, you know, everyone has to find their own ways of doing things. So Yeah,
I wouldn't sell yourself too short, because 14 years of running successful conferences, like, that's a lot to get done, right? And it's short time periods and quick turnarounds and a lot of fires that pop up, emergencies, a lot of things to coordinate. So, I mean, you definitely had your hands full over the last decade and a half.
Well, that's true, but I've also had some really good people around me. And I think, you know, we've got a pretty complementary set of skills in the team. We have a lot of people who are super organized and kind of on one level drive me mad by like writing down lists and doing those kinds of, I know it has to be done and I really appreciate it. And if we all operated in the same way, I think life would be very different. So, having great people around is good. And then I think, you know, you have to be very honest and open with the people you work with about what you are good at and what you're not, and vice versa. And, you know, it's not like I could hide the fact that I'm easily distracted to my team.
Right.
You know, they talk anyway. So, you know, it's generally a kind of, oh, thank goodness you said that, because, they're great. Yeah,
and approaching those relationships with vulnerability and compassion and just transparency is going to be better for the team overall, for sure. And the power of delegation, like you mentioned, of saying, hey, this isn't my strong suit, so let somebody else take it on. That makes total sense. Mm. So what's on the horizon for you? What's coming up? What are you excited about?
In the very short term, so the 1 week horizon, I'm really excited about seeing my eldest daughter, who's been away at university. And I was saying at the weekend, I went over to see her and took her out for lunch. So drove over on a Sunday, found her in a college, and we had lunch and then went around town and then I came home. And it's literally the first time in my life that I've ever felt grown up. Getting a house, getting married, all of those things all kind of felt like, you know, these were things that you do, but I still didn't feel like grown up. And so that was the very first time. So she's coming home from her first term away the weekend, and that's going to be amazing. And then next year, we look like we're going to be doing some in-person events. So we'll be doing virtual things. We're spreading a lot of kind of virtual one-day conferences out over the year, which, you know, means that we have time when we can spend with people, we can do the conference thing, we can kind of look at particular challenges. But also by spreading those events out over the year, you have a degree of connection between attendees and, you know, continuity. But at the moment, we're planning our first European or our first physical conference for a couple of years, which will be in Europe 4th and 5th of April, which is interesting times, because, you know, can't wait to get back. We need to make sure it is safe and makes sense. There's a lot of kind of big question marks, and I don't know when or even if you'll decide that you'll put this up on the podcast. I completely understand if the publication is deferred for a couple of decades. I'm cool with that. But you know, we've got this what's the new one called? It's the one the Omicron,
yeah,
variant, the Omicron thing, which you know, we'll see what happens. So we're really kind of designing something that will work even if it's a very local thing. I don't expect people to travel nearly as much as they would do traditionally. I mean, our US event, probably 60% of the attendees are from the US and 40 are from outside. So, you know, those dynamics, I think, are going to change in the short term, but I'm super excited about getting back to seeing people in real life. And
yeah,
I don't know what it is. You can get so much out of online, but, you know, maybe it's the smells or it's just a different thing. So yeah, next year is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. A lot of planning that you have to work on, make sure everything's safe and, you know, above board and all that stuff. So where can folks go to learn a little bit more about BOSS?
Probably the best place is our website. So businessofsoftware.org or .com. And everything's there. We have information about our events. We have videos and interviews and transcripts and all sorts of things of the previous talks. So we've got things going back years, including Bridget Harris, who's the CEO founder of You Can Book Me, who's done some amazing talks. So you can access all the talks, all the videos, hear about new stuff. And yeah, it's just designed to be a site that has got lots of resources for people that want to think deeply about stuff. We don't really believe in that seven sexy secrets of SaaS success type playbooks, that kind of bullshit. I think the whole thing for BOSS is that everyone exists in their own context. Every entrepreneur has their own unique set of circumstances, goals, aspirations. And the hardest thing to do as an entrepreneur is to work out what the right questions are. So I think, you know, we really try to help people think about that. And once you know what the right questions are, the answers are generally easier to come by. So, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Really, really amazing to hear. And anybody looking to scale or grow a software tool or learning about anything, check out all the good content there. And we'll be sure to put it up on the show notes and on the blog. And we'll get this published before your conference in April for sure, hopefully.
Cool. So the other, I have a question for you as well. But I mean, the other thing we do is if people sign up to the newsletter, when they get their confirmation through, we always say, challenge us with a question. What's the thing you're struggling with? What's the thing you're thinking about? What's the biggest issue you're addressing in your business? Because we've got over 300 hours of talks from people like Jeffrey Moore and Clayton Christensen and Bridget and Kathy Sierra and some, you know, pretty amazing, Toby from Shopify, some pretty amazing people, but it's quite a daunting collection of talks. So we always like to be challenged. So yeah, rise to the challenge and see if you can break us. And my question for you is, what's the thing you're most excited about for 2022, Ben?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think it's, you know, growing this podcast and getting more insights for everybody so they can help level up and get more done, and me working on my own productivity and, you know, taking all the lessons I've learned about like the Pomodoro time blocking. Well, you know, getting into that deep flow state is really, really something I'm super pumped in, and potentially getting into some real life conferences too, and getting out into the world again and exploring all of that. I'm super excited about. And then from the You Can Book Me side specifically, just growing our product and getting some cool things in place that are really going to open things up for a lot more teams to get that scheduling headache off of their plate.
Brilliant. And what's the single productivity hack that you have taken on over your career that has made the biggest difference, do you think? Because you're the expert.
Well, I'm becoming an expert as I get more of these conversations in. But I think the biggest thing, like you mentioned, is just setting up those time blocks and saying, I'm looking to sink my teeth into this one thing and just rid the distractions for that time period. So turn off the Slack, turn off the social media, just don't open it and say, you know, I'm digging into this, and not even putting, you know, a prescription or on what the outcome would be at the end of that time. Just saying, I'm going to sink my teeth in, see what progress I can make. That's been a huge help. Because that's something I struggle with, is doing that deep work, because I'm involved in so many little things at a small company. It's like you have a lot of hats, you need to be task switching a lot, and it doesn't really afford you that time to do the deep work. So that's something I'm getting better at each day and each week. And I think coupled with that is taking your to-do list and being like, what are the top six things, you know, three in business, three in personal, that I want to get done today? And then it's a lot easier to manage But there's other folks that, you know, subscribe to getting everything out into one big list. And then, you know, you're prioritizing based off of that. That's still something I'm keen to dig into and work more on that. But yeah, great question. Mm,
fabulous.
Cool.
Thank you. Well, what a pleasure. So cool.
Mark Littlewood. Yes, it's been great. Great talking with you. Thanks so much for being on Get More Done. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. There's no more emergencies or breakages of anything. And it's a good week ahead for you as well.
I really hope so. Thanks so much. Really nice to talk. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Have a good one. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Get More Done. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be on the show, you can visit getmoredone.youcanbook.me. Reach out to us on Twitter @youcanbookme or visit us on the forum, forum.youcanbook.me. I'll catch you on the next episode. Cheers.